Welcome to the Cuban Family Roots Podcast, a monthly podcast dedicated to discussing Cuban history and ancestral roots. I'm your host, Aileen Vega, podcasting from Woodbridge, New Jersey. As a genealogy enthusiast, I created the Cuban Family Roots Podcast to help others in their genealogical journey. I conduct interviews with Cuban researchers and geneticists, authors, and those with knowledge and expertise in Cuban history and genealogical research. I'm committed to conducting interviews that will point to genealogical information and resources to lead family historians in the right path to finding their family roots. From 1492, when Columbus claimed the island for Spaniards, to present-day Cuban, our history has been rich and traumatic. Now our family history is slowly vanishing due to archival despair. Cubans inside and outside the island yearn to capture, learn our past, our origins, and our ancestral roots. Knowledge of our history is the key to keeping our Cuban family roots alive. I hope you enjoy listening to each episode as much as I enjoy producing them. The Cuban Family Roots Podcast can be heard on Spotify, Radio Public, Google Podcasts, and many other platforms. You can support us by simply listening and engaging. Hello and welcome to the Cuban Family Roots Podcast. Before we begin, I want to wish everyone a happy Year of the Tiger. If this is your first time listening, my name is Aileen Vega. I was born in Cuba and raised in America. Today's podcast is about the Chinese in Cuba. When I was growing up, my father's best friend was of Chinese heritage. They used to call him El Chino, a term of endearment very much used in Cuba. I've always wondered why and how the Chinese came to Cuba. Throughout the years, I met with people who, since I'm a genealogy junkie, my question to them was always, hey, did you find your grandparents or your ancestors? And I would always hear, you know, it's really hard for us to find our ancestors. As I got more involved in genealogy and I started doing the podcast, a lot of Cubans of Chinese heritage approached me asking, hey, when are you doing a podcast on Chinese so you can help us? It took me a while because I wanted to find the right person that can help. And I came across Stephen Ouyang. He is a volunteer for an organization called Friends of Roots. This organization helps people, Cubans, Americans, anyone who has a Chinese heritage or ancestry, find their roots. He gives us a little bit of history on why and how the Chinese came to Cuba, and he also provides some resources on how someone Chinese heritage can begin to find their Chinese ancestors and trace back to China. Through his group, Friends of Roots, they provide tours for those who have already found their Chinese ancestors and take them back to their ancestral village. Very interesting. So if this is your first time listening, don't stop. Please subscribe. And I hope that this podcast episode can help you find Chinese heritage. I'll be right back. In 1833, after England eliminated enslavement along with the decrease of slaves in the U.S., Cuba suffered a labor shortage, which led many plantation owners to seek workers overseas. As a result, it led to an influx of Chinese to Cuba in 1850s in search for labor in Cuba's sugarcane field, since Cuba was at the time the largest sugar producer in the world. Political discontentment in China, along with natural disasters, changes in Chinese farming system, among other reasons, led many Chinese farmers and peasants into look for work in Cuba. Some willingly left into a form of slavery. The first Chinese ship arrived in Cuba in 1857 with 200 Chinese laborers and 8-year contracts. These Chinese were treated just as African slaves were. In fact, their situation was so severe that the Chinese government had to send an investigators to Cuba. Many of the allegations had to do with abuse and breach of contract by the plantation owners. Shortly after, the Chinese labor trade was prohibited and the last ship carrying Chinese laborers reached Cuba in 1874, establishing a Chinese community in Cuba. With the miscegenation law, Chinese ladies were forbidden to marrying Spaniards and it was a ban on interracial marriages, many Chinese intermarried with local population of Cuba, Africans, and mixed-race women. By the late 1970s, there were more than 40,000 Chinese in Cuba. These Cuban Chinese began to develop divergent communities. For example, in Havana, they established El Barrio Chino, or Chinatown, which grew to 44 square blocks and was once the largest. Aside from working in the sugar fields, they opened shops, restaurants, and laundries, and worked in factories. A unique fusion of Chinese-Cuban cuisine, melding Caribbean and Chinese flavors also emerged. Residents developed community organizations and social clubs such as the Casino Changhua. This community association continues to assist the Chinese in Cuba even today with education and cultural programs. The Chinese language weekly, Wan Hua Po, also still publishes in Havana. At the turn of the century, Cuba saw another wave of Chinese migrants, many coming from California, the 1959 Cuban Revolution. After Fidel took power, many Chinese Cubans participated in the anti-colonial movement against Spain. They still stand a monument in Havana dedicated to the Chinese that fought in the revolution. By the 1950s, the Chinese community in Cuba was already diminishing, and following the revolution, many also left the island. Cuban Revolution did create an increase in relations with China for a short time. Cuban's leader, Fidel Castro, recognizing and established formal ties with the People's Republic of China and Mao. But the relationship did not last long. Cuba's friendship with the Soviet Union and Castro's public criticism of China's 1979 invasion of Vietnam became a sticking point for China. In the 1980s, their relations warmed again. This was during the China's economic reform. Trade and diplomatic tours increased, and by the 1990s, China was Cuba's second largest trade partner. Chinese leaders visited the island several times in the 1990s and 2000s and further increased economic and technological agreements between the two countries. Prominent role in the United Nations Security Council, China has long opposed U.S. sanctions on Cuba. Today, it is estimated that Chinese Cubans, those who were born in China, only number about 400. Many are elderly residents who live near the rundown Barrio Chino. Some of their children and grandchildren still work in the shops and restaurants near Chinatown. Community groups are currently working to economically revitalize Havana's Chinatown into a tourist destination. Many Cuban Chinese also migrated overseas. Well-known Chinese Cuban restaurants have been established. My guest today is Stephen Oyeng, a retired lawyer and administrative law judge for more than 20 years. Steve is a fourth-generation Chinese-American and majored in history and Chinese studies before attending law school. Having attended the University of California, Berkeley, during the height of the ethnic studies movement, he had a continuing interest in American race relations, the Chinese diaspora, and the Chinese-American history. Since 2007, Steve has been a volunteer leader and lecturer for Friends of Roots, FOR4, a nonprofit all-volunteer organization that helps Chinese-Americans research their genealogy and family history. They also have the opportunity to learn about Chinese history and culture and visit their ancestral village in China. More recently, FOR, Friends of Roots, has taken groups to visit the Chinese communities in Peru. This was back in December of 2019, and Cuba in March of 2020. For more information about Friends of Roots, visit www.friendsofroots.org. And today in the Cuban Family Roots podcast, we have a very special guest, Steve Oyeng. And we're going to ask Steve some questions about the Chinese in Cuba. Hi, Steve. How are you?
I'm doing fine, Eileen. Good morning.
Good morning. How's California?
Actually, I'm in the Bay Area, so it's kind of cold, but probably not as cold as where you are.
That's true. Yeah, it's pretty cold out here in New Jersey. So I'm very excited to share today's conversation with you. Can you start off by telling us a little bit about the Chinese and why they came to Cuba and what part of China they came from?
Sure. Let me start by talking about where they came from, because the vast majority of Chinese who went to Cuba over the past 150 or 180 years, came from what's called Guangdong Province. It's a province in the southeast coast of China. So it's basically the area near Hong Kong. I think most people know where Hong Kong is. So if you,
right,
if you draw a circle, maybe like 100 miles from Hong Kong, the vast majority of Chinese who went to Cuba come from that area. Some others came from the next province over, which is called Fujian, which is just above, just up the coast from Guangdong and across from Taiwan. But most of the Chinese who ended up in Cuba came from that area that I mentioned around Hong Kong. And it's called the Pearl River Delta area because the main river there is called the Pearl River. Mm-hmm. And there's like 8 or 9 or 10, I guess you could call them counties in that region. And as I said, many, many Chinese Cubans come from that area. It's kind of like saying if you go abroad and all the, well, let's talk about it this way. You know, in Cuba, a lot of the people who have Spanish roots come from the Canary Islands and Galicia, which of course have their own cultures. And, you know, Spain is a very big country, but a lot of Cubans with Spanish roots come from these particular areas in Spain. So it's very similar with the Chinese in Cuba. Even though China is a gigantic country, the vast majority of Chinese who ended up in Cuba come from a pretty small and culturally distinct region. So that's
is there any reason why they came from that particular area that you know of?
Yeah, for sure. Because that was the part of China that had some of the earliest contact with the West. You know, when the Portuguese came, when the Dutch came, when the English especially came, you know, they established footholds and colonies. You know, Hong Kong became a colony of Great Britain after the Opium War in 1840. So because of that, that sort of provided ports of exit. People, those were areas where people could leave. You know, it's on the ocean. And so it was a way for them to leave China. Also, the conditions in that part of China were really bad in the 1800s. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of, I guess I would put it this way, the national government, which was the Qing dynasty, was very weak at that time. It was under a lot of pressure from the Western countries that were trying to colonize China. And there was a lot of internal problems, too. There were famines, floods, a lot of local civil wars. So there was just a lot of chaos and disorder in that part of China, starting in the roughly in the mid-1800s. So those were the reasons people felt like they had to get out of there. You know, things were just really bad. And so that was kind of the factors that pushed people to want to leave China. And then in terms of where they ended up, there was a big outflow from that part of China all over the world. You know, large numbers went to Southeast Asia, you know, in terms mm-hmm. of Malaya, Singapore, Vietnam, Thailand, but also a lot of immigration to the West, to the U.S. As you know, a lot of Chinese went to California and New York.
Right. But
there was also a major outflow of Chinese to Latin America and the Caribbean. So to Cuba, Jamaica, Trinidad, Dominican Republic, and mm-hmm. that even continues now. So, you know, there's large communities in Colombia and Venezuela. So there was a lot of Chinese outflow to Latin America, the Spanish-speaking countries, and to the Caribbean. You know, starting in the mid-1800s, there was a need for labor in Cuba on the sugar plantations. So the first big wave was starting in around the 1840s, and for the next 30 or 40 years, something like 70-something thousand Chinese, overwhelmingly men, very few women, came to Cuba as indentured laborers. So basically they were providing labor on the sugar plantations and in other industries. And the conditions they were under was basically horrible. It's very similar to slavery. And they in many cases, they worked alongside enslaved Africans in Cuba. So it was the difference though is that the Chinese generally went under these 8-year contracts. So they basically went to Cuba, had to work for 8 years under really terrible conditions, but those that survived many of them stayed in Cuba and they went to the towns and cities and started small businesses. So that was sort of the first wave. And an interesting thing is in the 1870s, a number of Chinese came to Cuba, not from China, but from the United States. They were called the Californios because Chinese in the U.S. were facing a lot of discrimination. You know, the anti-Chinese, the Chinese Exclusion Act was passed in the U.S. in the 1880s. And so there was a lot of discrimination against the Chinese. And so some in the U.S. decided, we need to get out of here. Let's go to Cuba where maybe we'll be able to do better. So
Right.
at that time, a number of Chinese went from the U.S. to Cuba, and a lot of them were small business people, so that it provided sort of an infusion of capital to the Chinese community that was already there, and that also accelerated the development of small businesses. So that's kind of the 1800s. In nine, starting around the World War I and 1920s, there was another big wave of immigration from China to Cuba. That's actually when my family and my wife's family went to Cuba. And a lot of those folks were, again, small business people. So, you know, that wave of immigration tended to settle in towns and cities and start small businesses, you know, businesses like ice cream stores, bodegas, restaurants, that kind of thing.
Right. Is that around the time when they established El Barrio Chino?
Barrio Chino was actually started earlier than that in the
70s.
1800s. In the area right behind the Capitolio in Havana. And it's obviously it's still there. There's very few Chinese left there now, but that neighborhood was established in the 1800s, the last half of the 1800s.
Yeah, I was reading that it encompassed like about 44 square blocks of like, Chinese commerce, restaurants, laundromats, I mean, you name it.
Cuba used to have the largest Chinese community in all of Latin America and the Caribbean. It was very large at one point.
I think in every small village in Cuba had some Chinese population, because I myself come from a very small village, and I remember we had Chinese families in that village, as small as it was, as it is.
I
And
think
they still live there today,
that,
some of the families.
that's very true. You know, I have friends who have relatives in places like Jaruco, and my wife's family was out in Batabano. I know there were families in Ciego de Ávila. We had relatives way out on the eastern end in Santiago de Cuba. So yeah, as you said, they were in the big cities, but also the small towns.
Yeah, the small little villages. Because for example, from my village, La Salud, there's a very famous I think he works for the New York Times. I know it's a New York newspaper. His last name is Lam. Lam. He's a writer, one of the big New York newspapers, and he's from my village, so we know his family. So yeah, we had a lot, like a handful of Chinese families that lived in that small village, and I'm sure it's like as you said, same thing all over across Cuba.
Let me mention the last big wave of Chinese immigration to Cuba was in the 1940s and 1950s, because that was when the war or the civil war between the nationalists and the communists was going on in China. And so that again caused a lot of chaos. Prompted a people to say, you know, we want to get out of China again. So again, there was a wave of immigration out of China because of all the civil war and the establishment of the People's Republic. And so a big wave came to Cuba in the late 40s and early 1950s. So that was sort of the last big wave. Since then, since the Cuban Revolution, there's been some, but very, very little immigration from China into Cuba. Just a handful of people, very
I
few.
think actually the a lot of the Chinese in Cuba have left Cuba around the 19 late 1950s, 60s after the revolution?
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. And like in my wife's family, that's they left in the early 1960s after the revolution. And they were afraid that their small businesses, they had a bodega, and the family ran a number of bodegas, and they could sort of see the handwriting on the wall that if their businesses got nationalized, they would be in a tough situation. So most of my wife's family left. A few stayed, a few are still there, but the vast majority of her family, and then certainly I would say a majority of the Chinese Cubans generally also left. Some stayed, but a lot left for Puerto Rico or Florida or New York, New Jersey, as you know.
Yes. My next question centers around an organization that you belong to called friendsofroots.org.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about that and how your organization or that you're part of or that you started can help those who have Cuban Chinese background in terms of their genealogy?
I'll give it a try. So I'm with this group called Friends of Roots. It's an all-volunteer nonprofit organization. And basically, we've been working with Chinese Americans. We started with Chinese American young people, but now we work with all ages. And what we do is have a program where Chinese Americans can sort of research their genealogy, their family history, learn something about Chinese culture and geography. And we help them figure out where they're from in China. And over 30 years, we've gotten pretty good at that. And so what we do is the culmination of the program is to actually take people back to their ancestral villages in the Pearl River Delta and Guangdong Province. So we actually take groups back there so they can visit their villages. And if there's still relatives and family there, they can meet their family members. And I think what we help is, a lot of Chinese Americans, if you're the third, fourth, fifth, sixth generation, they don't speak Chinese anymore, and they don't really know where to start in their search for their genealogy. And so we've been able to help them. Now, obviously, the last couple of years, because of the pandemic, we're not going anywhere. Everybody's sitting at home, and we haven't been to China for a while. I should also mention that over the years, we've noticed that a lot of people that have come to our program, their families actually didn't come directly to the US from China a lot, just like, well, I guess the way I would put it, we noticed that a lot of people that we worked with had roots in Latin America, in Mexico,
Right.
Nicaragua, Cuba, Peru. Peru has a gigantic Chinese population. So
Yes.
over the years, we thought it would be kind of cool to visit the diaspora communities in Latin America and the Caribbean. So starting in 2019, we took a group down to Lima and we toured around Peru to visit the Chinese community there, learn more about it. One of the leaders for that program was actually born and raised in a Chinese Peruvian family. So it's always good to have sort of an insider to help us figure it out.
Right.
And then in March 2020, just before the pandemic, we took a group down to Cuba to meet the Chinese community down there, which is it's kind of fading away, I hate to say it, but it's the community is very small these days, but we were still able to go down to Cuba and meet the Chinese community down there. Now, in terms of
That's
what,
very neat.
yeah.
That's very neat.
So in terms of helping Chinese Cubans, I think there's sort of two parts to it.
Okay.
One is tracking down who your Chinese ancestors in Cuba are. Now, I think it's hard. It's not an easy thing to do for a number of reasons. By this time, there's not very many Chinese-speaking Chinese Cubans left in Cuba. The community of people who actually came from China who still speak Chinese is very small, and they tend to be in their 80s and 90s. Also,
Right.
COVID has hit them very hard. So I think there's probably less than 100 or so people left in Barrio Chino who were actually born in China. But there, as you know, there are thousands and thousands of Cubans who have some Chinese roots. So the first thing to do if you want to trace your roots is figure out who is your ancestor, what was his or her name. And if at all possible, it's you got to find their name in Chinese, because if you don't have the Chinese characters, it makes it much harder. And I'll give you one reason why. You know, suppose the name is spelled Leon, you know, Spanish. Well, Leon could be a Lee, could be a Leong, it could be a number of other surnames in Chinese. And unless you know the actual Chinese surname, it makes it hard to figure out where that person came from in China. So it's very important to try to figure that out.
Are there any like organizations within Cuba that someone can look, to help them with information?
There are. And the first one I would point to is called the Casino Chunghwa, which is kind of the main umbrella organization in Havana for the Chinese community that's there. They actually have a website now, finally, which makes it much easier to be in contact with them.
Oh,
And
that's great.
the website is called BarrioChinoCuba.com. So that's a great place to start. And I would also mention that they have an office still. I think it's on Amistad in Barrio Chino. And it's been a while, but like almost 20 years ago, I was there and I was able to look through some of their records. And they maintained paper records, you know, records of many Chinese in Cuba, not just from Havana, but from all over the island. It wasn't exactly complete, but still, there are hundreds and hundreds of records there. Now, even 20 years ago, some of those records were not in great condition because, you know, they're on paper and with the humidity and everything else, they were not particularly well preserved, but they were there. And we were actually able to find some records when we searched through there. Those records are in Chinese and in Spanish. So that's a great place to start if you have some idea who you're Chinese Cuban ancestor was. If you can get a name, even if the name is in Spanish and not in Chinese, that might be a place to start. Now, also as I said, the Casino Chunghwa is kind of the umbrella organization. If you go to that website I mentioned, there are links to various organizations throughout Cuba. Most of them are in Havana, but there's still some out in the provinces. They're still out in Santiago de Cuba. And those organizations, some of them are like what I call them regional organizations. So they represent Chinese who come from a particular part of the Pearl River Delta. Some of them are family associations, you know, say for the Chans or the Lees or the Wongs. So they're all listed there under that big website, and their contact information is there. Now, again, I think it because there are fewer and fewer people who still speak Chinese and read and write Chinese, it is still going to be hard, but that's a place to start. And so for a Chinese Cuban, again, the place to really to start is try to figure out the name of your ancestor, any documents you can find, like passports, birth, death, or marriage notices, tickets for steamships, you know, all that kind of thing can help figure out who that person was and then eventually where that person came from. And then once you have that, then it's easier to find out where the family came from in China. I would also mention that it's really important if you can to get out to the cemetery where your ancestor or ancestors may be buried because typically, when Chinese people die, wherever they are in the world, their gravestone will record their name in Chinese characters, their dates of birth and death, of course, and also where they're from, down to the village in China. And
Wow, that's
over the
really
years,
good.
when we've done our work for Friends of Roots, it's really critical. You know, if you can find where your ancestor's gravestone was, is take a picture of it. You know, people obviously, a lot of people don't read Chinese, but if you can take a picture of it, of the Chinese characters, that's really the key that can unlock all that history and the connection back to a village in China across the ocean.
Now, let me
Yeah.
ask you, that organization that you mentioned in Cuba that has kept records,
Yes.
are they able to help with translations?
You know, they when I worked with them like 20 years ago, yes, because they still had a number of people who read and write Chinese. I think they may at this point, but again, you know, with the older generation dying off pretty quickly, I don't know how many folks are still there that can read and write Chinese, but I know there are some. There still has to be a few. And when we were there with our group in March of 2020, there were still people there that could help who could read and write Chinese. And so this is the kind of thing you got to do it now because that generation isn't going to be around forever, right? So
Yeah.
once that link is lost, it's going to make things much harder to figure out who's who and where they came from if you don't have people that can help you, read and translate the Chinese stuff. So again, I think that's the hardest part is figuring out who your ancestor was in Cuba. Once you can figure that out, though, then the next part of the search is, well, where did this person come from in China? And that's where our organization has a lot of expertise. If you go to our website, there we actually have something called the Roots Village Database. So you can look up villages in China that your relative may have come from, and it'll list the villages. It has maps and stuff. So that part is hard. It's still hard, but it's once you have the person's name, dates, and name of the area they came from, it's hard, but it's relatively easy to figure out where they came from in China. The other thing I wanted to mention is, the Chinese are real good record keepers. And for Chinese people, it's very important to know your family history. So,
That was actually my next question.
okay, go ahead.
If
Why
you can
don't
shed some light on the, because I always hear that, when I watch shows like Finding Your Roots,
you ask
they always talk about how like the Chinese are very good at keeping records, especially genealogical records. So if you can shed some light on that,
that?
so
Right. Okay.
that other people from the community, are aware that these records can actually be found.
Okay, so let me start this way. Again, in this part of China where most Chinese Cubans come from, most villages are centered around a surname, a family name. So you'll go to a village where everybody is named Wong. It's a Wong village, or it's a Li village, or it's a Leon village, whatever. And practically every village keeps something that's called in Chinese. It's called a Zupu. This is Mandarin. It's Zupu. But basically, it's a family genealogy book that goes back 20, 25, 50 generations. So again, once you have a name, they can figure out, okay, you're so-and-so's son or daughter, and just trace it way back. We've had people go through our program that have traced their families back not only to the village in China, but also back up in the North China, because people went from North China down to the Guangdong area where most Chinese
Right.
Cubans come from. And you can literally go back 1,000 years, 1,500 years,
Wow, that is
and
amazing.
see who all your ancestors are. Now it's very male biased because China, like many other societies, is very patriarchal. So they track male names much better than female names. Some villages will have the women in there, but in the olden days, a lot of times they'll just put the wife's name as a surname without ever giving her actual name, right? But that's just how it was in Chinese culture. It's a little bit different now. There's a little bit more equality for women now.
Okay.
But again, if you can figure out who your person was and the village, chances are the family genealogy book will be there in the village. And
That's amazing.
it links
Wow.
back to the whole clan. So for example, I come from a sort of a small surname, Ao Yang. It's kind of an oddball name. But if you go back to my village, they have books there that literally will take you back 1,000 years. So if you really want, you can figure out who your great grandfather 25 generations ago was.
That's amazing. So you must have a huge family tree.
It's like several telephone books just for
Wow.
my village. And again, it's all in Chinese, so obviously you need someone who can navigate those kind of records. I should mention one thing though, not every village or family has that, and that's because during the parts of the Communist Revolution, like in the 1960s when China was getting really radical, it was considered sort of backward and feudal to keep these records. So the communists made you know, some families just destroy their genealogy books. It's really a
Oh my
shame because
gosh.
you would lose all that information.
Oh, I
But
hate when that happens.
yeah, so
It
yes.
breaks my heart.
Yeah. Now, some people, they hid their records away because they knew they were going to be in trouble. So they would just wrap them up and bury them in a hole somewhere. And eventually China changed, and now it's totally cool to keep those kind of records. But during the real radical part of the revolution in the 60s, it was kind of a no-no to keep that kind of information.
Right. That's good to know. Now, going back to Cuba,
Yeah.
I know I heard that the Chinese government had kept their cemeteries, their Chinese cemetery. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. So again, as I mentioned, it's if you can possibly find the gravestone of your ancestor, that's really key to unlocking a lot of this information. And there is a Chinese cemetery in Havana. It's literally across the street from the Cementerio Cristobal Colon, which is the gigantic cemetery in Cuba, as you know. But right across the street is the Chinese cemetery, because back in those days, there was discrimination against the Chinese in Cuba. So the Chinese had to have their own cemetery. But it's that cemetery is still there. And if you go in there, there's, you know, the graves do have the information written in Chinese and Spanish. Again, there's a caretaker there who is not Chinese speaking, but if you go to Havana and get in touch with the people at the Casino Chonghua, they're obviously it's the umbrella organization, and they're totally in touch with the Chinese cemetery, and they can help you, you know, visit that cemetery and see if they can help you find your ancestor. Now, that's not the only cemetery. I've been to cemeteries out in the countryside, you know, just general community cemeteries. And again, you know, the local Chinese people may be buried there. So if you're from a particular town or village out in the countryside, if you can figure out who your person was, you would just go visit the local cemetery and see if you can find that ancestor's grave. And again, chances are the information will be not only in Spanish, but also in Chinese.
Now, when the Chinese came in the, 1818, the first wave, the ones that came in the 1850s, to Cuba, did they spread out or were they mainly in Havana?
Actually, they were definitely spread out. So because they came, you know, as indentured laborers, so they weren't really necessarily in the city in the beginning. They were out on the plantations. So wherever there was sugar going on, which was a lot of the island, that's where the Chinese were sent to work, you know, cutting sugarcane, processing sugarcane into molasses and sugar, all that stuff. I remember going, I think it was in Trinidad that there were Chinese working there alongside the enslaved Africans on the sugar plantations there. So I think that explains why, you know, some Chinese, after they finished working on the plantations, they may have just gone to the local town and, you know, settled down there and try to make a living out in the countryside.
Interesting. Are there any other genealogical tips that you can offer those of Cuban Chinese ancestry?
There's a couple of books that I highly recommend. One of them is the book, I think we talked about this previously, about the book is called Chinese Cubans, and it's by Professor Kathleen Lopez out of Rutgers. And it talks about the history of Chinese in Cuba from the earliest days to the present. And part of the book is how she helped a Chinese Cuban family trace back their genealogy. And she actually accompanied them back to their village in the Pearl River Delta region. So if you read that book, it's not only a general history of the Chinese in Cuba, but it'll give you ideas on how you might be able to figure out who your ancestors were. And then once you have that information, to get back to China if that opportunity presents itself. So that, again, the book is called Chinese Cubans, and it's by Professor Kathleen Lopez out of Rutgers.
Rutgers University. Yeah, I'm familiar with the book, and it's actually my to-read list of books that I want to read.
Now, there's a couple of
Very interesting.
There's a couple of other books I wanted to mention. One is actually fiction, but again, the author is Cristina Garcia, who's written a number of novels about Cuba, and one of them is called Monkey Hunting. And even though it's fiction, it's very well researched, and it'll give you an idea of why people left China and what happened to them when they got to Cuba. So I, again, even though it's fiction, I think it provides a great background for Cuban Chinese who want to know more about their history. Can I mention two other books?
Please do.
Okay, there's one in Spanish. The author is Mitzi Espinosa Luis, and she's Chinese Cuban. She's mixed race like a lot of Chinese Cubans are now. It's written in Spanish, and the name of the book is Huellas de China en este lado del Atlántico. And it's a history of the Chinese in Cuba, but also in other parts of the Caribbean. And it's also a very useful book to understand the background. And once you kind of understand the history, I think it gives you the context to for people who are trying to figure out their particular family history and genealogy, because obviously personal history is totally connected with the general flows of history. It's like, why did
Oh,
my family?
absolutely.
Yeah, so that's another great book. And then finally, I wanted to mention a book that's not about Cuban Chinese, but I think it could be very helpful too. So it's about a Jamaican Chinese family, and it's written by an African American Chinese Jamaican woman by the name of Paula Madison. And the name of the book is Finding Samuel Low, Lowe, Finding Samuel Low by Paula Madison. And the reason I mentioned that is, Paula does not speak Chinese. She had a mother who was half black and half Chinese, but it shows how someone who doesn't read or speak Chinese can still do the research and figure out how, figure out who their in her case, grandfather was, and try to trace it back to their village. And so it's a really good book. In fact, it's on YouTube too. Again, if you just go on YouTube and look for Finding Samuel Low, you get some hints on how a non-Chinese speaking person of mixed race can still figure out their Chinese roots. And eventually, she eventually got back in touch with her family. And to this day, she goes back and forth to China and visits them all the time. And so it's a very inspiring book for people, again, who don't may not speak Chinese, but they know they have Chinese roots and want to sort of dig deeper and figure that out. So
Wow,
I'm,
you've
yeah.
given us a lot of information. I was going to ask you if you can repeat the website for your organization, Friends
Okay.
of Roots, and the other Chinese Cuban organizations.
Okay, so our organization is called Friends of Roots, and our website is literally Friends of Roots, all one word, dot org. And if you go to that website, there's information about our program, but there's also that village database. So once you know the area and the surname of your ancestor, you can start searching for that information. Again, that's the sort of the easy part is once you know the person's name and area, it's still hard, but it's fairly easy to find the village. The hard part, I think, for Cuban Chinese is going to be figuring out who was my ancestor, what was his or her name in Chinese. That's going to be tough, I know. Now, the group that might be a good resource for that is this Casino Chunghua. And again, they've got a website that's very robust now. It's very different from 20 years ago when they barely had any internet in Cuba, right? But now it's a little bit better. And it's called barriochinocuba.com.
BarrioChinoCuba.com.
Dot com. Yes.
That's pretty easy.
Yeah.
Okay.
And under that website, there's links to all these organizations that I mentioned.
Okay. Is there any website for access to the cemetery or anything like that, or it's just better to go to Cuba and speak to someone from Barrio Chino, Cuba, and
I don't think that the cemetery itself has a website, but the cemetery is connected with this Casino Chunghua, and I think if you get in touch with the people on the website, they probably can give you some information on how you might be able to get out to the cemetery. In fact, I'm on the website right now, and they have a link to the cementerio in Vadado.
Oh, okay.
There's information about the cemetery there. Now, whether or not you can email them and say, "Hey, can you look for my ancestors' gravesite?" I don't know if that's possible, but
Right.
at least there's information about the cemetery on that website. I'm actually quite impressed because, again, 20 years ago, there was like nothing you could find online,
Nothing.
and but now it's much better.
Yeah, thank God.
Yeah.
That has helped everyone in the genealogy community, not just Cubans, but everyone.
Right.
Another thing that I was going to mention and actually ask, since the Chinese spread out throughout Cuba, right? And you mentioned that there's cemeteries in other locations within Cuba. Do
Yes.
you know if these cemeteries have been refurbished? I know there was a lot of these cemeteries were, a lot of the stones were falling apart. They weren't upkept, and it was hard to get information from the headstones.
Right.
Do you know if the Chinese government has also, besides the one in Havana, of course,
So
but
I,
do you know if they, go ahead, I'm sorry.
so I know that there have been efforts to clean up and fix up the and keep better records of the big cemetery in Havana. I do not know whether the cemeteries out in the countryside are having the same kind of upkeep. Again, I remember going out to a cemetery, just the general cemetery in Batabanó, because that's where my wife's family was from. And it was in decent condition. I mean, some of the lettering was sort of fading and stuff, but it was totally legible. And it wasn't an all Chinese cemetery. It was just a community cemetery, and they had Chinese people and, non-Chinese Cubans all in there. But just to answer your question specifically, I do not know if, efforts to fix up those cemeteries out in the countryside is going on.
Okay. Now I just wanted to know because I know that, Havana is usually what everyone mentions. Because it's
Yes.
the capital,
Yes.
and I know, hearing from other people that they have worked on the Chinese and other communities, but I just wanted to know because I know people always ask me, so it's one of those things that I wanted to know, but yeah, I mean you have provided so much information that will help a lot of the Cuban Chinese, in their genealogy. So I thank you very much, and I hope that you and I can keep in touch. I'm hoping that I can help anyone from the Cuban Chinese community that comes to me, and that I can refer them back to you, and that we can help them, because a lot of times I see questions, and I say to myself, "Wow, it must be frustrating." I think the biggest hurdle for them is the language, but
Most,
now that you have mentioned, the organizations and where they can start looking, I think that's a tremendous help.
Well, I it's been a pleasure, and I do hope we can meet in person. Maybe we can go to a Cuban Chinese restaurant out there in New Jersey or New York City.
Well, I doubt that I'll be going to the West Coast anytime soon, but if you come this way, please let me know. Look me up, and yeah, let's definitely get together and go to a Cuban Chinese. There's actually one in Elizabeth, so maybe we can go there.
That would be
It's
awesome.
actually Peruvian, Cuban, and Chinese,
Yeah,
which is pretty interesting.
I noticed over the years that a lot of the old Cuban Chinese places, they've sort of morphed into more like Chino Latino restaurants. So they'll serve, lomo saltado and asopao, things that are not exactly Cuban, but they're more like Peruvian or whatever. But it's still kind of fun to go to those restaurants and see the old Chinese waiters speaking Caribbean Spanish, that really fast Spanish.
The Chinese culture was so influential in Cuba that I remember growing up, when my aunt would come over, because she was like the family cook. She would come over and she would make arroz chino. So, even like I don't have any Chinese background, but
even those that didn't have Chinese background, we still incorporated that as part of our Cuban cuisine.
I mean, who doesn't love rice, right?
I know, and I always tell my Chinese friends, Chinese Cuban rice is different from American,
That's right.
Chinese, and they're like, "How is that?" I'm like, "You have to go to a restaurant. That's the best that I can do." Because personally, unfortunately, I don't know how to make it. But I can't wait. Actually, my aunt told me she was gonna have me over after the new year and the holiday and all this. So I'm gonna ask her to make me some Cuban Chinese rice. I
Excellent.
haven't had. Well, Steve, thank you so much for being in our show, and I look forward to continuing to keep in touch with you.
Absolutely. It was a pleasure.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Cuban Family Roots Podcast. As always, we can be heard on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Radio Public, to name a few. If you have any questions or suggestions for an episode, please contact me at the Cuban Family Roots Podcast at gmail.com. I want to thank my guest, Stephen Ouyang, and I want to mention some of the website and resource for those looking for their Chinese ancestors. In Cuba, barriochinocuba.com, and here in the United States, friendsofroots.org, www.friendsofroots.org. You can contact me directly at cubanfamilyrootspodcast@gmail.com. Thank you very much, and I look forward to hearing from you and your opinion. Please support our podcast by subscribing, and happy Chinese New Year.